again, everybody, and welcome to the Mainland Podcast, episode number 135. I am your host, Michael Citro, and I am the managing editor and founder of themainland.com. We cover all things Orlando City and Orlando Pride. Joining me, my co-host, as always, David Rowe, one of our esteemed writers. Dave, how you doing?
I'm confused and frustrated and, feeling a bit proud.
Well, we're going to do something a little different this week, folks. We don't have a guest. We're going to keep it very casual. We're going to keep it really, really informal, kind of like Major League Soccer's video review policies.
I'm glad I'm wearing shorts.
Just going to keep it real cash, you know, no sense. We tried to get a guest for this. I wanted to have on referee Silviu Petrescu on the program this week. I ran outside and yelled his name a few times, and he didn't answer. So I feel like I put in a little more effort than he did in reviewing a very controversial call at the end of the Columbus game, which we'll talk more about a little bit later.
Yeah, no doubt. You absolutely put more work in, that's for sure.
So, all right, well, why don't we dive in? We've got a lot to talk about. We start off with a trip to Philadelphia in the U.S. Open Cup that did not go well for Orlando City. In fact, it went rather poorly. 4 minutes in, Alejandro Bedoya scores a goal off of a set piece and makes it 1-0. And that was it. That was all the scoring. You really hate for it to be a pretty brutal way to give up a goal early in a game. You hate that it's Alejandro Bedoya, of all people, that scored it. Mm-hmm. And you hate to be out of the U.S. Open Cup. But this was a game where, you know, James O'Connor had some options. He could try to come back with as good a lineup as he could probably try to muster for purposes of going for it, as they say, and making it an honest effort to win and advance. He could have gone with complete squad rotation and tried to win it with mostly a backup squad. There were definitely some options available to him. One of the options that was not available to him was Yoshimar Yotun, who came down with an illness after the game the previous weekend, the win over Toronto. So, he went out, he fielded a strong lineup, Dave, and I felt like this was a clear message that the Lions were taking this tournament, this competition, seriously and wanted to advance. But we talked about last week the difficulties involved in playing a game on short rest against a team on the road, against a team that did not travel and played only a friendly over the previous weekend. And, they got to rest most of their starters for most of that friendly. And you could definitely see a difference in the jump in the legs of those players on each side, and particularly was more pronounced after the early goal.
Without a doubt. And you had last week rightly predicted the difficulties facing the Lions in that match, like you say, with them coming off a easy, friendly versus the Lions having, played a regular season game. And O'Connor did the best, I thought, with what he could. It was, is it what you would have done, I would have done, or Joe Blow that makes comments on the website would have done? Who knows? Probably not. But, even with the substitutions, there was lots of questions. But like you said, he had Dom out there. So, he had the primary goal scorer out there, to go for it. No Yoshimar Yotun, as we've seen ever since the World Cup starts. That hurts Orlando anytime that he is not available. So that would be a big thing. Of course, the landlord in between the sticks, the one goal that Bedoya scored, not much he could have done about it. And I thought the rest of the night he did a pretty good job. So that was a positive that I took out of it.
Yeah, Earl Edwards Jr. coming up very, very big again in that game. He, in fact, denied what should have been a sure goal on the corner kick when Fafa Picot got a free header, and just point blank range, Edwards stops it, but not really much he could do about controlling the rebound from that distance on a powerful header. So he just got the piece off of it that he could, and it just happened to fall right onto Bedoya's foot. So just unfortunate bounce after a good save. And, you know, it was just a – you could just see the difference in energy levels between the two teams. Jim Curtin, to his credit, the Philadelphia Union coach, decided he was going to attack with speed up the two flanks, and – they caused a lot of problems for the Orlando City fullbacks in that game. In fact, you know, it was a very lopsided type of game. It seemed like in terms of chances, Orlando City's chances were pretty few and far between. And Dom Dwyer was pretty isolated up top. It was not a whole lot of attack for Orlando, not a lot of being able to hold the ball. And especially the last 20 minutes of the game, they couldn't even string two passes together. It was just lump the ball up the field and hope you don't lose it. And more often than not, they didn't win the balls in the air. So just right. a really tough tough game in the midweek for Orlando City. Justin Miram did not make the trip. That was the big news. He wasn't in the 18, didn't make the trip. And we'll talk more about that and what that might mean a little bit later in the show as well. But really, other than Earl Edwards Jr. making some saves, there really wasn't anything to talk about after the early goal on either side. So a pretty boring match. And, yeah. You know, Philadelphia Union did what they had to do. Hats off to them. They get to host now the semifinal match against the Chicago Fire, who took care of business quite handily against Louisville City, which was the last non-MLS team left in the competition. I think we're both probably going to be unanimous on man of the match being Earl Edwards Jr., but you know, I'll give you the chance here to surprise me.
No surprises there, folks. Earl Edwards Jr., definitely man of the match. He, like I said early on, he came up big and often, even if it wasn't early. One side note, I thought Shane O'Neill did a good job in his debut, but Earl stole the show.
Yeah, that's a good point. I forgot to bring that up. Shane O'Neill makes his Orlando City debut. Really played a spectacular game for Orlando City. He had one in particular moment where he had to go 1v1 with Corey Burke, and not only did he win the ball, he just completely inserted himself between Burke and the ball and allowed Edwards to come over and pick it up. So just some really good footwork from him. I thought it was a very impressive debut, and James O'Connor must have liked what he saw, because Shane O'Neill got the start again on the weekend against the Columbus Crew. And why don't we turn our attention toward that? I have a feeling we might talk about this for a little while.
This one might take a little bit of attention.
Yeah, so Orlando City at Columbus, they come out and the Lions get on the board with a goal from Sasha Kljestan. Almost got on the board 2 minutes in, Yotun hitting the post. That would be a big post, as it turned out. At the time, we didn't know it. And, you know, although all posts are big usually when, you know, you're talking about a game like soccer where there's not a lot of goal scoring and the games are usually very close. But Orlando City takes the lead, leads at the break, something that they don't do very often. And come out of the break, and right away they gave up the goal, 1-1. Unfortunately, Shane O'Neill not good on this particular play, a ball into Jossie Zardes, who was really kind of in between the two center backs in the middle of the area, and nobody on him, everybody was kind of just marking air, both Schuler and Neil on that play. And that one moment of switching off gave Columbus the equalizer at the time, made it 1-1. On we played, and you know, a very good counterattack. One thing that we've seen since James O'Connor has come aboard is a more cohesive counterattack by the Lions, and they were able to score off of that, coming back, taking the ball away in the corner from Zardes on a play that Columbus fans felt like was a foul. There may have been some contact there, but I think that Tony Rocha got the ball before the man, and I thought he took it cleanly before any contact was made. If there was, I don't know how significant the you know, the contact really was. Zardes went down to try to sell it. Didn't look like he needed to go down. Petrescu didn't buy it, which was interesting as the way things turned out. But you go the other way, and a couple passes later, you get it to Higuita. Higuita gets it to Yotun. Yotun makes a man miss, goes forward, and just slots an unbelievable pass behind the defender for Kleshchen to run onto, and Kleshchen, who already had a goal, decided, you know what, I'm going to let somebody else score it, slides it over for Stefano Pino, and Pino made it 2-1. Pino had had a couple of really good opportunities before that that he did not cash in on, so it was good that he was able to make it 2-1.
Yeah, that if Pino had missed on that one, then we would have needed to send him back to USL, because I think I could have made that one. But regardless, you know, unselfish play by Kleshchen, you know, to get the assist instead of the goal. Like you say, it's, you're feeling pretty good. This is, you know, multi-goal game now. They've come back after, you know, giving up the goal early in the second half. Things are looking, you know, pretty good. They're playing well, as you said. They're much more the attack. It's not that they're a more attacking team; it's that they're a better attacking team. I don't know what it is that O'Connor is drilling into them in practice, but whatever it is, it seems to be on that level at least working. I think he still has a lot of pieces he wants to get pieced back together, but they definitely showed you something with that counterattack and that goal.
Yeah, just a more cohesive look on the counters. I mean, the counters aren't just lumping it up to Dom and hoping, you know, there looks like there's a plan. There looks like there's a strategy of where people are supposed to go, where they're supposed to link up, and it's nice to see. But Pino makes it 2-1 at that point in the game. Probably could have been 2 or 3, you know, or 1 or 2 more goals for Orlando. A couple of good chances that went a little bit wanting, but you know, there was a lead, and you started to feel kind of good. The team was staying organized. You know, Columbus, you knew they were going to get some chances, but the team was staying. Like I said, they were organized. I mean, even the set pieces, and Columbus got 17 corner kicks in the game, Dave.
Yeah.
None for Orlando, 17 for Columbus, and none of them really looked all that dangerous. It was always pretty well dealt with by Orlando City, so it was good to see that. Everything looked kind of good. You just thought, you know, you just hoped that they didn't get, you know, find that one guy open, or you hoped that there wasn't that moment of falling asleep. You hoped that there wasn't that strange bounce that just fell perfectly for them, because you knew they were going to keep coming, keep attacking, and they did that. And, you know, Orlando City just kept defending. You know, it was their third game in 8 days. Some of those guys played all 3 games. It was evident that some of them, they were starting to run out of gas late. 4 minutes to go, Dave, and the roof completely caved in with one call that I can still just not even believe was made. I mean, how many times have we seen routine balls go into the area, two guys go up for it, maybe there's a little bump, and nothing is ever called on these because of the light brush of contact? And in this particular instance, Patrick Mullins decides to go down. He falls backwards, which is interesting if he was supposedly hit from behind. And Silvio Petrescu, you know, he buys it. He says, yeah. Yeah, penalty. And he goes to his ear a couple times and makes the VAR sign to the players, not to the crowd, and points to the spot again. So you didn't go look at your own play. I mean, I understand the review process in terms of an offside. You know, the guy up in the booth is going to have a good look. You probably can trust him to make an offside call, unless it's the LAFC game. And in this case, he just doesn't – is he just too lazy to walk over to the monitor? I mean, I don't know what is going on in his head, because there was such a light brush of contact that it's insane that a foul was called. Because if that is a foul, Dave, anywhere on the field, let alone in the penalty area, you would never have any running play ever in a soccer game.
Right.
Everything would be free kick, ball gets kicked, free kick. Ball gets kicked, free kick, and that's the way it would go the entire game until the ball got in the box, and it would be free kick, ball in the box, penalty.
Because anywhere else, this would have been called. This would have been called for simulation.
Hello. It was not good. It was not good. It wasn't handled well. You know, you could see why maybe Petrescu would think that there was a foul on the play, but if he doesn't go and rewatch, there's no chance for him to change his mind. Now, how you know, John Freeman, the video assistant referee, doesn't see a clear and obvious error with the call there. I have no idea. I mean, I have seen exactly one person online who is probably just being a contrarian who said it was a penalty. Literally every other person, and everyone that you would actually put any stock in their opinion on.
And even those that you don't, Atlanta fans said that it wasn't a penalty.
Columbus fans, Atlanta fans, I mean, it's everybody. Not a penalty. It's just not in any universe a penalty. But it reminds me that I forgot to say something earlier. That was that after the second Orlando City goal, we got the obligatory 90-second delay to see if it was really a good goal, even though it was obviously a good goal all the way around.
Well, sure. When we score a goal, we have to make sure that there wasn't something untowards happening on the part of the Lions.
Yeah, I think Garber's on the other end of the line there. When he touches his ear, it's like Garber's like, I can't see anything that we can I just don't have anything I can overturn right here. But yeah,
Petrusca's like, Don, are you there?
Yeah. So Zardes steps up and makes the spot kick. It's 2-2. And, you know, there's still time to get a point on the road. But then, of course, you get the Will Trapp wonder goal out of nowhere, which he'll never do again in his career, which he's never done previously in his career. And all of a sudden, you've got no points in a game you should have won. And it's really one of the games that will leave the worst taste in your mouth of any game that we've seen. And that's saying something. I mean, you know, it's not,
we're kind of used to it at this point.
It's a pattern. I mean, people said, oh, Adrian Heath should stop complaining about the officials. Oh, Jason Christ should just stop complaining about the officials. Well, you know, to his credit, James O'Connor didn't complain about the officials. He just said, look, I'm not going to talk about them. You all saw what happened. I don't have to say anything. It's, you know, a little bit different tactic. Maybe things will work out better this time. But it is frustrating. It is completely unnecessary. It's James O'Connor's been in charge of this team for three MLS games, Dave. In his first, he had a tying goal on the road disallowed for a not clear and obvious error called a clear and obvious error. The referee on the field called it a good goal, didn't call it offside. The AR didn't call it offside. The video assistant referee called it offside when there is no view that shows a clearly offside Justin Miram. So that would have been 2-2 with about, what, 20 minutes to play in L.A. And all the momentum on the visiting team. They come home and they win, okay? They go to U.S. Open Cup and they lose that one, and then they go to Columbus. And then you're winning a game with just minutes to play, just a few minutes to see out, and that call gets made. It is really hard for me, and I said this on Twitter, it's really hard for me to tell the conspiracy theorists that no, there's no conspiracy against Orlando City. I don't have a leg to stand on anymore.
No, we've said it, for years now, we've been saying, you know, don't mistake incompetence for a conspiracy. But when the preponderance of evidence keeps piling up on us, we're getting buried in it. And like you say, no leg to stand on. We're drowning in bad calls. So when we try to say, hey, there's no conspiracy, all it comes out is like glurg, glurg, glurg.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know. I don't have a leg to stand on when I say, no, it's just they're just bad. They're just bad at their job. How can you be this bad at your job one direction all the time? Isn't there two directions? Wouldn't you eventually make a bad call that gives Orlando City a game, just gives it to them out of nowhere? You would think
so. Not only
so.
That. Well, not only that, but, if let's say there wasn't a video system in place to double check these things. Mistakes are made. This one should have gotten called at that second level. Now, yeah. I understand MLS does it different than they did in the World Cup, but as we all saw, the VAR in the World Cup worked really well.
It did. So, it did for the most part. There was really not a lot of complaints about that. There was, I think, maybe two like late in the tournament, but up until that point, everything went really smoothly.
And so if I'm MLS and I'm, you know, an early adopter of this, which they are, I'm saying, hey, everybody saw that. Let's go get some tips from what they did in the World Cup as far as using this system. See if we can't make it better. But they don't seem to be interested in making things better, including their response or no response to this call.
Yeah, the pool reporter, that, you know, and I know the guys up there. In fact, our Guillermo Torres was at the game, and the pool reporters and the reporters that spoke to him were very careful to try to not let the referee just say it's a VAR issue and I don't have to answer. They did a good job of crafting questions that required an answer out of Silvio Petrescu, who, by the way, I put in my even before this game, he was in my triumvirate of the three worst refs in MLS, along with Baldomero Toledo and Ted Uncle. Those three are the worst. Geiger gets all the headlines, but he's not as bad as those three. Those three are awful.
Oh well, Uncle is a meme for bad refereeing at this point, and I think Petrescu, we're going to have to figure out one for him as well.
Yeah, Toledo and Petrescu have made the worst calls I've seen, and even before there was an Orlando City, I've not liked some of these referees. But anyway, I don't know we can't really say anything else. I mean, it was a disgustingly bad call. Everybody saw what happened. But do I expect a makeup at some point? No. Everybody said, well, these things average out over time. Well, the law of averages average out over time. This team's going to the playoffs on bad calls the rest of the way.
Yeah, no doubt. Or for the next 2.5 years, we will get every single call.
And you know what? I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I think there are not favorites in MLS. I will point to Joseph Martinez scoring a hat trick this weekend, a week after he like quite blatantly headbutted someone and didn't get suspended. You may recall that for what looked like just a trailing elbow, PC got an extra game in the opener this year.
Right.
You may recall that a 19-year-old used foul language and got a 3-game suspension. He used it in a closed door friendly before the season and got a 3-game suspension. But Joseph Martinez, nothing. Comes out and scores a hat trick against, who was it, against DC? But, you know, it's just, I think there are favorites and there are non-favorites. And I think, I would say Orlando City's not high up on the favorites list based on what I've
No,
seen.
we're not. And, you know, Mr. Garber, I know you already got lots of money. If you like, we can start a GoFundMe account if it'll help.
Here's the thing that bothers me. If I'm Flavio Augusta da Silva, the owner of Orlando City, I have spent a pretty good amount of money to
Indeed.
get an MLS team to purchase my, ownership of my franchise. It's obviously it's a single entity league, so you're really not an owner per se. You're a shareholder, whatever they call them. But I'm on the phone. I'm on the phone saying, could have saved my money, could have kept it if you were just gonna make me waste it. You could have just let me know that.
There are other leagues that I could have gone and started a team in.
I mean, USL was maybe the place we should have stayed because it we didn't we you know you saw bad calls there, but I mean, come on, you didn't see anything like what we're seeing now, and they didn't have the video review system in place there, so a bad call was a bad call, but now it's a bad call is inexcusable because there's no reason not to overturn that, and shame on Silvio Petrescu for not having the balls to walk over to a video monitor to see if he'd made a mistake or not.
Well, and shame on him for after, getting off the field, all of the feedback to then just go to say nothing, to not address it. Be man enough or be proud enough in your work to own up to making a mistake. It's not going to help us get the game back, but I think everybody would feel at least a little bit better if the man came out and said, "Yeah, I screwed up."
Yeah, Sean wrote a story about that on our site, and I agreed with him. I think there, one thing you do is you diffuse a problem and you calm everybody down if you don't double down on it. Now, what he said after the game was that, we're talking about the pool reporter. They crafted a question. He said that RJ Allen basically charged in from behind. I saw him charge in from behind and commit the foul. Okay, well, he was behind him. Did he charge in? I mean, he ran next to him and jumped. Did they bump? Maybe a little bit, but I
Yeah, but they
mean,
were shoulder to shoulder.
yeah, I mean, it wasn't like any. I mean, if he gets him in the back of the shoulder, even if that's like not strictly within the laws of the game, there was so little force there that Mullins didn't even move sideways. He just threw his arms up in the air and fell down when he landed. That's all he did. And there was not nearly enough force to have done that. It was just, it was ludicrous that that actually worked. I mean, Orlando City does that, and they don't get the call, you know? They don't get that same call. And it's really just, I mean, you can't even put words to it. So,
it's,
I mean, you know, we should
It's like you
on.
Said, we're getting to the point where you and I have defended against conspiracy theory for a long time, but it's getting to the point where it's getting incredibly tough for us to continue doing so.
Yeah, I'm not going to defend it anymore. I'm just going to move on. I'm just going to say, well, you know, it is what it is, and I'll just
pro gonna pro.
So, anyway, a 3-2 loss where a 2-1 win once stood, and you can't say that Orlando City would have held on for the win by any stretch of the imagination, with still at that point in the game, 4 minutes to play, and you know, a few minutes of stoppage time. But you know, Columbus is a team that had been really struggling to score goals. They had been frustrated all night. I feel pretty good that the team comes away with at least a draw.
Yeah, I mean, let's assume that Trapp still gets his, you know, incredible goal. Well, you're 2-2, not 3-2. If they haven't gotten that easy one,
A road point. This is a team that needs positives. That would have been a positive, even though it would have felt kind of like a negative at the end of the game happening the way it did. It would have still felt like they took something off the road from a good team, a playoff team. And, you know, it's just a shame. So I feel bad for James O'Connor, because in two of his three games, he's won one of them. And in the other two, he's got absolutely screwed.
Yeah. And not only that, but it sours what otherwise had been a game of, you know, plenty of positives. I mean, you know, we kind of talked about that, with the counterattacking, with coming back, with, you know, getting the first goal. There were so many positives, and we didn't even mention Earl getting hurt and going off, and Joe Bendick coming back in.
Right. Yeah. You know, that was tough for Earl. He went out early in the game. You know, he turned an ankle on a play in the box where, I think it was Will Johnson that got him coming back, trying to break up a play. Was it Will Johnson? Maybe it was Shane O'Neill. It was one of them coming back to try to break up a play, and they did break up the play from Pedro Santos, took the ball off his foot, so he didn't get a shot off. But unfortunately, there was a collision. He rolled his ankle a bit, and they tried to play through it from about the 26th minute to about the 30th minute or so, and then they had to go off. Joe Bendick came back on. Bendick played really well. He made one really outstanding save, quite a few, you know, sort of more routine saves. But the one really outstanding one on Mullins before Mullins flopped and changed the game was save of the week material, if they still had a MLS save of the week.
And there was, and like we said, there was nothing he was going to be able to do. There was nothing anybody was going to be able to do against Will Trapp's goal. I mean,
it was ridiculous.
It was perfect. So, you know, there's no blame there for Bendick. And, you know, anytime you have to goalkeep against a penalty kick, you know, you're less than 50-50. Because even if you guess the right side, there's no guarantee that you're going to get it. So, I mean, that's the two that we're scoring on. I can't really, you know, I can't really blame him for him.
Right. Bendick read the play right. He dove the correct way, but Zardes put a lot on it, a lot on the shot, and it was just too powerful to stop. So you tip your cap, Will Trapp. You tip your cap to him. The other thing too is, if it's not a conspiracy, it sure as hell is bad luck for Orlando City. I mean, what are the odds that Will Trapp and Alan Gordon both score wonder goals late in games against them from as far out as they were? Now, this is where you go back to the heavy legs. Third game in 8 days, and you had to play Pino the full 90 because other guys had to come off. Chris Nigita was cramping up. You had to make the goalkeeping change. You know, he wanted to get Kleshchen off because Kleshchen had played 180 minutes within the last week and then played another 60. That means you can't take off Pino. Pino is the guy who should have closed down Will Trapp, and he tried.
Right.
He didn't get there. And, you know, he made a sort of a token jump. But, you know, Pino's a guy who doesn't play a lot of minutes. So at that point, he had to have been just dead, too.
I mean, it's hard
to close down somebody when you're just dying. You got no breath in your lungs. You got no nothing but lactic acid in your legs. And it makes things tough. I'm not excusing him, but I'm tipping my cap to Will Trapp because he'll never make that shot again.
Well, you know, there you go, Will. Of course, it happened against us, but you know, like you said, that's
just the luck of this team.
If it wasn't for bad luck, we wouldn't have any.
I don't know if the stadium's built on an ancient burial ground. I don't know if somebody pissed off a gypsy. I don't know. Something happened.
We need to get a very short lady to come in and make our house clean.
Yeah, we definitely need an exorcist or something. I don't know. Something's gotta change. Man of the match, Dave. I'm going with Sasha. Goal and an assist.
Yeah, goal and assist, and played well the rest of the time he was out there. Plus, coming off of 90 minutes, you know, the previous match against Philly, and I did the five takeaways for both of these, and I even mentioned in the one from the Philadelphia game that, you know, it was interesting that he didn't get pulled off, and I wondered how it would affect his game at Columbus, and you know, even though he only played 60 or so, he did excellent, and when he was out there, there was. You know, nothing. There was no problems I could see in his game. Like I said, even having played that many minutes. So yeah, Sasha gets man of the match for me as well.
I like what James O'Connor's done with Sasha. He's keeping him deeper. He's getting on the ball more, but he's also giving him freedom to roam forward and get into the box. And he's making sure that people are staying, you know, properly spaced. I think that was a lot of the problem with Justin Mirren playing next to Kleshchen, is that there was not proper spacing. You know, Justin likes to cut in on that right foot, that favored right foot. Well, now he's cutting into Sasha Kleshchen area, and then you're bumping into each other. You're bringing defenders closer. So if you got two guys on one and one on the other, now you got three defenders on two attackers who are just standing right next to each other. I think that this adjustment's been great. And that brings me to my next point about Justin Mirren, who it's been a damn shame that he hasn't been playing, because I think that James O'Connor would have, you know, rectified the situation. If he fixes the spacing issue, both Kleshchen and Mirren should theoretically be a lot more productive. And Mirren, mm-hmm. it would have been nice to have seen him play with a little bit of fire and passion against his old team. I mean, that would have been fantastic. Now, he's missed three games. Since the LAFC game, he hasn't dressed. He didn't travel to the Philadelphia-Columbus trip. He is now the subject of rumors. Now, here the rumors are that he's on the trading block, that he may get traded back to Columbus. There's been another one that says a deal is very close with FC Cincinnati. Either of those would make sense for those teams. I think the Cincinnati deal would probably make more sense for Orlando, because you're not going to get anywhere near what you gave up to get him from Columbus to give him back to Columbus.
Correct.
So it's just we rented this player and it cost us a crap load of money and we didn't get a whole lot out of it. I'm all for the redemption arc myself. I am for him saying, you know what? I want to be a part of this team. I came here. I want to finish this. I want to see it out. I want to turn this thing around. I believe James O'Connor can do that with him the way he kind of has with Kleshchen. Kleshchen in his three MLS games under James O'Connor has two goals and an assist. His first assist, by the way, since the last game of the six-game winning streak. So Kleshchen is back to being, you know, more or less Sasha Kleshchen. He was a very instrumental player in each of the last two MLS games for Orlando. And he actually didn't play poorly against Philadelphia. He just didn't seem to have a whole lot in the tank for that game. But I'd like to see Mirren, you know, come back and do this thing. The other two teams, I think, were Portland and Vancouver, I think, were the other
Yeah, it sounds right. Teams.
If I'm Orlando, if I'm moving him, I would like to move him to the Western Conference. I mean, this is a guy who's killed Orlando in the past. And if he does leave, he's going to come back here with a chip on his shoulder. So, you know, my first choice would be to give, you know, if they have to trade him, and I think they should only trade him, as we wrote today on the site, if he really desires to go. I mean, at that point, you don't hold the player hostage. You have to, say, all right, you want to leave. We want to make you happy. Because that is good business, because then other players won't say, well, I don't want to go to Orlando, because then if I'm not happy, they won't move me.
Right.
You kind of have to do it, and it's the right thing for the player. It's the right thing for the club. So my choice would be, first, send him to the Western Conference. Second, send him to FC Cincinnati, and hopefully maybe, you know, they're feeling we really need to make a statement. Let's get this player. Let's give up all these assets, because there's a lot to work with there. There's expansion draft picks. You can say, okay, well, we want you to take X, you know, we want you to take the player that we want you to take and then give them to us. Or, you know, there's international slots. There's, you know, all kinds of allocation money for a new team because they haven't spent any of it yet. So there's a lot of possibilities there, a lot of flexible options to trading him to FC Cincinnati. Last thing I would do is send him back to Columbus. Because number one, first of all, his reasons for wanting to leave Columbus are still valid. That team still could move to Austin. He didn't want to be in that circus. And second of all, you're going to be facing Columbus twice a year every year.
Yep. Well, you know, when Justin came into Orlando, he looked like a man on a mission. And I think that, like you said, with the lack of spacing up top between him and Sasha and all the everybody trying to figure out how to work together, I think that made it a little bit more difficult. And then the team goes on a losing streak, and then you know he's got other things that's going on, obviously family stuff. So there's a whole bunch of things that snowballed, but it would still, you know, unless he's soured on, you know, the city and the fans and the club, you're right. If O'Connor, and I'm hoping it's just that, you know, I don't know why he hasn't dressed, but hopefully it's something that O'Connor's addressing, and you know, maybe we see him in the 18 next game and given that opportunity. Because you're right, you know, he's O'Connor's coming in. I don't want to say he's fixed Kleshchen, but he's allowed Sasha to do what he's does. And that's resulted in, you know, like you said, it's resulted in goals and assists. So if he can do the same thing with Justin, and there's no reason to think that he couldn't, that's the best case scenario for Orlando, because no matter who he goes to, certainly not Columbus, but no matter who he goes to, we're the return on investment is not going to be what we want it to be. So I'm with you in the order of how I hope things happen, but I'm very much hoping that we find out in the next day or so that he'll be suiting up in purple again.
It would be nice. I think this would be a great redemption arc. And you know, there's a segment of the fan base that doesn't like him because he struggled, and you know, when he finally did score, you know, he you know, put the fingers in the ears celebration because of tuning out the haters, that kind of thing, which wasn't directed at everybody. It was directed at the
No.
people that have been yapping at him. It was directed at the people who've been hateful, and I don't hold that against him. I know there's some people that do. There's some people that think he's a big baby, that he's not tough enough, or that he's even more ludicrous that he's making up the thing about you know, people wishing he was dead or whatever.
No.
It's not in his character. It's not what I from what I've seen of his character, from what the Columbus media guys, who I'm close with some of, have told me about his character. It doesn't match up. It's never been what he's about. So I don't care for that. I think that that kind of talk is stupid and needs to stop. And I think that, you know, people say, well, you know, his situation, he'll never be able to win the fans back. Come on. He scores a couple goals, he'll win the fans right back.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because what came to my mind in the past 24 or 48 hours when I've been thinking about this is Notarino. There was a time where Notarino was getting, you know, practically booed by the fan base. They were calling for his head. You know, he's over the hill. We need to get rid of him, blah, blah, blah. Suddenly, Notarino turns a corner. He's playing excellent. And all of a sudden, everybody loves, you know, Noche. And, you know, now we got people going, oh, wouldn't it be nice if we still had him? Well, no, I don't think we need to have him right now. But point being is that kind of turnaround, like you said, look, winning solves a lot of problems, and scoring goals makes a lot of people like you. So
I
if
mean,
he
because
can
it's
do that,
not
then
like
he's back in it.
he dragged the team name through the mud and got arrested and did something despicable. He just hasn't been productive. You know, all he has to do, because fans are very forgiving, because fans will take a convicted felon back in a heartbeat if they're
If
scoring
he scored
goals.
goals,
And I'm not saying all fans, I don't want to paint everyone with that brush, but a large segment of the population will forgive a lot of things. if you know, if the guy's being productive. And I think that Miram hasn't really done anything wrong. He's only struggled. That's his entirety of his entire litany of sins is he has struggled to score goals and provide assists. And the assists are not all his fault because guys aren't finishing plays. He should have two or three more assists on this season. So, you know, it's not all bad. And even every game, even games that he's not been his best, there have been two or three great moments by him that nobody else on this team could pull off except for maybe Yotun. Yotun can run at defenders, and Miram can run at defenders. No one else on this team can run at defenders.
Yeah, no, that's true. Mueller can run into them, have the ball bounce correctly, and get beyond them.
Yeah.
That's something Mueller can do, but he can't run at him and get around him. Not in the conventional way.
Right. So anyway, one way or the other, before this trade window or the transfer window closes, we'll have our answer on Justin Miram, and I hope he stays here. The team needs another capable offensive player. Josue Coleman has not produced as much as we'd hoped, and you know, I said early in the year, he's a teenager. It's a lot to put on a teenager, you know, leaving his country and going to a new culture. It's a lot to put on him. We're seeing the same thing in Atlanta with Barco. Barco's getting a lot more minutes, and he's not doing a lot more with him. So it's not always about play your kids. That's the saying, play your kids. Everybody wants to see your kids on the field. But Coleman's gotten some opportunities, and he hasn't really done a whole lot with them. So
Well, and our man of the match certainly wasn't a kid, so.
Yeah, he'll get there. Coleman will get there. He just looks like he's just not quite – he looks like a teenager. And people want Pierre Da Silva to play. And Pierre Da Silva, again, a teenager who's not even really showing enough in training to make the 18, but people want to give him a starting spot. And because they say, well, why not? What's the worst that can happen? Well, you can lose by 5 goals instead of, you know, that's the worst that can happen.
You can lose worse.
Yeah, yeah. So, by the way, Pierre got loaned out to St. Louis FC and was man of the match for their 2-2 draw the other night. He had the game-tying goal, although he'll never score an easier goal than that. It was a rebound off the goalkeeper that was sitting on the line. He just had to nudge it.
Hey, yeah, but you know what? Goal's a goal.
Right. So he did score a goal, and, you know, that's not the only good thing he did in the game. He wouldn't have been man of the match for that. So congrats to Pierre. All right. Why don't we turn our attention to the Orlando Pride against the Seattle Reign?
Let's do that. I feel like this is a story we've told before, though.
I feel like we should get dressed up for this, you know, put on a tie.
Oh, okay.
Because that's what happened yet again. Fifth straight time these two teams have drawn. All three meetings this year, both meetings last year, this was 1-1. The unlikely heroine of the game early, Tony Pressley, who scored a surprising goal of the week candidate. I think much of the goal itself. It was a great deal of pressure for the Pride, and she ended up finding the ball and putting it in the net, and it wasn't really anything fancy about the goal itself, but it was nice that the Orlando Pride took the lead 1-0. Unfortunately, just not able to score that elusive second goal. And, you know, as we've seen so many times, the Pride give up a second, give up a goal, and not really able to do anything else after that. So it was 1-1. Dave, we're going to talk about officiating again a little bit.
Yeah, we are.
I don't want to talk too much about officiating. I've been of the opinion throughout the three seasons the Pride have been playing that the NWSL referees, as an average, as a whole, are worse than MLS referees. So that's what I think of NWSL referees.
That says a lot.
This particular referee, I'm not blaming the draw on this referee, so let's get that out front. I am not blaming the Pride did not create enough chances. They weren't sharp enough in the final third. So I'm not saying they should have won the game. But I will say that I'm getting a little annoyed over the last several games, the discrepancy in the number of fouls called against the Pride, considering, and as Tom Sormani even admitted the other day, one of the least physical teams in the league. The foul count was 17-3. The Pride had 17 fouls. And only three for Seattle. Now, Seattle is a little bit more of a physical team, but apparently they do it very, 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 very cleanly. I saw Sidney Leroux get called for getting pulled back by Steph Catley. I saw Marta get called a foul because she put her shoulder up against the shoulder of a Rain player and tried to go around her. I don't even know what to say. I mean, it's not just this game. 17-3. Coming into this game, in fact, the Pride were still middle of the pack in fouls called in WSL. So, considering the fact that they've been so badly outnumbered in terms of fouls lately, says a lot because it was basically kind of average. It was, most of the games, like fouls were like 10-8, 12-10, pretty normal. But no, that's not the way it's been of late. I can give you the numbers. Would you like to hear the numbers?
I do want to hear the numbers because I do feel that they tell the story better than we ever
True.
could.
So it's 17-3 fouls, 17 fouls for the Pride, 3 for the Reign. 3 fouls in an entire 90-minute soccer game. That right there is unbelievable. But it gets better. Okay, so that's the last game. The game before that at Utah, 16-6. Again, Utah only having 6. Utah is one of the more physical teams. At Houston, the game before that, 10-2. 2 fouls in 90 minutes, and they didn't get the first one for more than an hour of the game. We've talked about that. Just the last 3 games. 43 fouls for the Pride, 11 for the opponents.
I was an English major, not a math major, but I can do a little bit of math, and that's nearly four times the amount. And in two of those games, five times or better than five times the amount of fouls called. That's ridiculous.
It's quite ridiculous. That's something that needs to get looked at. Tom Cermani had no answer for that. I have no answer for that. It's again, this is not a physical team. This is not a team that is dirty. It's not a team that you expect to see these numbers from. The 10 at Houston was probably fair, quite honestly. 10 fouls committed, yeah, that's probably about right. But 2 for Houston? I don't think so. I watched that game and it wasn't 10-2. 16-6 at Utah. No, I don't believe
No.
for a minute that Utah only committed 6 fouls in that game. They were the home team. They maybe get a break there, but a 10 foul break? At least, at least the Pride got the win there. And then against
Right.
Seattle, 14 more fouls for the Pride in a game that was incredibly evenly played the entire game. The entire game was that was it is there's a reason that these two teams have drawn all 3 times this year. They're extremely evenly matched.
Yeah, and it's not like I know that Tom Sermani said that he wanted to be a more physical team this year. I can only assume that the refs heard him and are making it up in their heads that they are, because there's no reason for it to be this lopsided. Like you said, I mean, even if Utah is getting the home advantage, it's not a 10 foul home advantage. I'd give them a 4 foul home advantage, but that would still mean that they got away with 6 that they shouldn't have.
Well, I mean, even you just cut that in half and make it 16-11, or cut a few off Orlando's or whatever. I mean,
Then
not every,
it's
every
reasonable.
time Seattle went down, the whistle blew. And every time there was a 50-50 where both players went down, Seattle got the call. It had to be, you could see it was frustrating some of the players. You could see it was frustrating Marta especially.
Oh yeah, and she's not one to hide her emotions. So yeah, you could definitely tell, especially when it was called on her that one time. It's not something when you're historically one of the best players in the world, you're used to maybe getting the calls, not having them go against you.
And 2 of those were really big. The one on Marta and the one on Sid both took away scoring chances, and really good scoring chances. So it is unfortunate. But again, I'm not blaming the loss on the officiating. I'm just pointing out that there's been a really bad discrepancy for the last 3 games for whatever reason. I don't know if the Orlando City owners some maybe ran over the dog of the head of pro referee organization. I don't know. I can't fathom why this is happening. The Pride thing is very sudden. I mean, the NWSL referees are not good, but they're usually not good both ways. But lately, and it's again, it's the last three or four games. It's not good. I mean, even if you go back the fourth game, the Washington Spirit only were called for five fouls the game before that. So it's like, is it impossible to foul a Pride player? I mean, is it just that hard to commit a foul against Orlando?
Evidently. I mean, you know, I'm a big advocate of evidence and data, and the evidence in the data says yes, it's incredibly hard to foul an Orlando Pride player. I mean,
the average for the last four games is four fouls won by Orlando players
in 90 minutes of play, plus stoppage.
No, four times 90 minutes. Oh yeah. The average. Yeah, you're right. The average is 90 minutes. Four. It's bad. It's bad.
It's yeah.
Anyway, we move on. It was a 1-1 draw, and so Orlando were not able to jump over the rain into second place. Would have been a huge win because it would have given Orlando Pride the first tiebreaker if they finished level on points with the rain, because they would have won the season series. But nope. So the rain remained a point ahead of the Pride with a game in hand. So that's going to be tough. So the Pride are really, they got to get some wins down the stretch. They got to win some games, and you know, they'll come back from the Tournament of Nations. They'll get Sky Blue at home, and then we'll see what happens here down the stretch and see if they can get back in the playoffs. Missed a very good opportunity to get a home win against the rain. But again, when every time you touch the ball, you're getting a free kick the other way, it's kind of difficult to, you know, get any rhythm. So, player of the game, Dave, I'm going to go with Toni Pressley because of her being the only player to score for the Pride. And also, she saved the Pride's bacon with a back save as the ball got in behind Haley Kottmeyer and hit Toni Pressley in the back, and that prevented a goal. So I would say a big save on one end and a goal on the other end is pretty good. Oh, Haley Kottmeyer, a very close runner-up.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've got to give it to Pressley as well. I mean, getting the goal, I mean, just you feel great for her on that one, and then sacrifice the body on the other end. It's pretty much a no-brainer. Kottmeyer's been great, of course, with Ashlyn Harris having been called up by the inscrutable Jill Ellis. So it's really nice having her as your backup goalie when, you know, she could very likely start on other teams. So very nice there.
I wonder what would have happened if the Pride had Morgan and Harris, and if you know, Rapinoe had been playing for Seattle. That might have been a more exciting game.
It might have been, and the only way we would ever know is if Jill Ellis decides that the NWSL is important.
Yeah, well, I mean, if Jill Ellis, in her defense, all of the teams named the United States pulled their players from NWSL games.
That's true. Every United States team did do that.
Not any Australia, Brazil, or Japan team did, but the United States team, for some reason, felt that was important to do.
Yes. What are you gonna... I'm glad the others didn't, because we've got a ton of those players.
Yeah, that would have probably not been good even more. I mean, who knows how many fouls the Pride would have had without the Brazilians and Australians?
Oh, geez.
30, 40?
At least.
I don't know. We'll move on. Tournament of Nations is coming up, Dave. Three, we already said the teams. They're going to be playing a round robin, three dates, three doubleheaders. It'll be the United States and Brazil, Australia, and Japan. Those four teams will battle it out just like last year. No NWSL games to interrupt from here on out, Jill. I know that you can maybe keep your players in camp and make them miss the Sky Blue game. I don't know.
She'll have to have them there for the cool down period.
Yeah. So that will be, again, this coming week. We've got some games coming up. And it's going to be interesting. It'll be fun. It's a fun tournament and a
Yeah.
good warm up for World Cup qualifying, as the United States will be getting ready to try to win CONCACAF and qualify for the World Cup next year. Morgan Harris, of course, are playing for the U.S. The Australian team has selected both Alana Kennedy and Emily Van Egmond, and former Pride players Steph Catley, Lisa Devana. So, plenty of familiar faces there. The Brazilians, all four, got selected. I was a little surprised that Camila did, considering she's just now coming back from injury. But Camila, Pollyanna, Marta, and Monica all called up for Brazil. So, lots of reasons to watch if you're a Pride fan.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, between you've got people on three of the four teams that you can root for, not to mention the fact that these are going to be some of the better teams in the world, and it's just fans of the podcast know that you and I both enjoy watching women's soccer. So I mean, I'm certainly going to be tuning in and seeing how it goes. It's World Cup's over. We got to get as much soccer as we can.
Yep, and World Cup's over, and World Cup is just gearing up to get ready. Because
That's
the 2019 World Cup is in France, and we got to get ready for that.
very true, and of course, the really nice thing about that is the U.S. is going to make that tournament, I think.
They got a good shot.
So
Yeah.
they got a good shot. So we may we might be able to wear some red, white, and blue in the next in the 2019 World Cup. So that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. It wasn't that long ago that the U.S. had to play a play-in game against Italy, so messed
True.
up in CONCACAF qualifying. So hopefully that won't happen again. And darn it, Jill's not gonna let that happen again because she's calling those players in early.
That's right.
You're gonna miss your club games. How do you like them apples? And then she sends two of them back. She's like, oh yeah, we got to get down to 23 player roster. Kalia Ohai and Jaylene Hinkle, thanks for your service. Sorry you had to miss your games.
Yeah.
Not cool. Not cool, Jill.
Yeah, that, and this is not the first time that we've had to call Jill out on that.
No chill, Jill.
I like it.
Jill has no chill. All right. Well, Dave, I'm sure we have some mail that we should probably get to.
I would hope so.
I mean, you can ask us anything. I have at least three questions that I know of. There were two emails and one tweeted at us, at least only one that I saw. Maybe you've seen more.
Not as of yet, but I'm checking because you never know.
Okay. By the way, the US's first game is against Japan, and that's Thursday night. That's actually where I'm going to be at the Orlando City, New York City FC game. That starts an hour early, though. The US women at 7, Orlando City plays at 8. We'll talk a little bit more about Orlando City at New York's or against New York City FC at home a little bit later, but we're going to get to our email, our mail, basically. Not all of it's the E variety. Oh, it's all E variety, but it's not all email, if that makes
It sadly does.
sense.
And you said it so
Yeah,
well.
I did not, but that's okay. All right, so let's tell the kids how they can ask us anything, Dave.
Well, you can go on the Twitters and use the hashtag AskTMLPC because Michael decided that PC was going to stand for podcast. But anyway, that's hashtag AskTMLPC. Of course, you can at the mainland. You can at mainland Michael. You can at mainland Dave to any of the above to get it to us. Of course, you can also email us at the mainland at gmail.com if you want to do it the supposed old-fashioned way. You can, of course, send it by carrier pigeon if you happen to know where we live, although I don't think we've gotten any that way so far.
Yeah, send us an owl here at Hogwarts.
Send us a raven.
Yeah, all right. All right. By the way, there are no new 5-star reviews on iTunes to read, so that'll save us some time this week.
But we checked this
That's
week,
right.
so that's good.
Yeah. All right. Let's start with the Gmail. Because we have some Gmail. We've gotten some Gmails, and we need to read the Gmails. Anyway, I digress. The first question comes to us from friend of the podcast, Lee. If my computer will catch up with my superior speed brain.
Okay, I'm not sure if that says something more about our computers or our brains.
How's my brain faster than a computer? I don't know. All right, Lee says, this is a good one. I really like this one. Since my current MLS fantasy team name is Jason Christ related, I think it's past time I came up with a new one. I'm running a bit low on Orlando City related puns, however. The best that I have so far are St. Elmo's Dwyer and Inspector Gadget. Can you two think of anything more clever and amusing? Any suggestions would be welcome. Thanks. Dave, what do you got for Lee?
I don't know if I have anything more clever than that. I'm trying to figure out something O'Connor related. Let's see. I'm going to go like something like O'Connor, can you see? Or are you James O'Connor? Come with me if you want to live.
All right. Personally, Lee, I got to say, as a child of the 80s, I love St. Elmo's Dwyer. I think that's fantastic.
I agree. That was awesome.
I don't think you're coming up with anything better than that, but let me throw this out at you just to give you an option. You don't have to use it. I won't feel bad. It ain't over till it's O-VAR. I think there's nothing more Orlando City themed than that.
Not currently.
All right. It was terrible, but I gave you an option. So don't say I didn't try.
And you did warn ahead of time.
Yes. By the way, we will answer any question. We didn't say we would answer it well.
No. That's true. But we will answer it.
All right. David has sent us an email. David Victor says, have you seen – he says, hello, Michael and Dave. Have you seen the previews for Shazam and Aquaman? Do either of you have faith that DC movies are going to be better? I'll let you start.
I have seen them, and if what I've seen in the previews is indicative of what we'll see in the movies, I actually do feel pretty decent about both of them. The guys, Zachary Levi is an outstanding actor. He was a favorite of mine from the show Chuck.
I love Chuck.
Yes, Chuck was incredible. If you haven't watched Chuck, it's on one of the Netflix or Hulu's or whatever. Go watch it. It's outstanding. It also has Yvonne Stravinsky. But I think that tonally he's perfect for that character. And you know, there was a lot of worry early on about maybe the costume looks a little too cheesy. But I think that may be what they're going for, a little bit more of a Guardians of the Galaxy, not quite Deadpool, but, you know, definitely Guardians of the Galaxy humorous type thing, which they desperately need. So I like that. And then I actually just saw the Aquaman one today. You know, it'll be a little bit more serious, but I don't think it's going to be as dark as some of the other stuff they had, more in line with you know, Wonder Woman, although I did hear somebody say that it's essentially the story of Black Panther, which, you know what, there's only so many stories in comic books out there, and Aquaman probably came first anyway. So, you know, as far as how it does is in regards to the in-world physics, you know, with talking underwater and fishes and whatever else. You know, suspension of disbelief will allow me to enjoy that, but I think it looks good. So overall, if those are their next two offerings, that's way better than what they've previously done. So I'm liking it.
All right, I will be less verbose than Dave's answer. I will say that yes, I saw both trailers, enjoyed them both tremendously. As for whether or not it makes DC's movies better, I'm the wrong person to ask, because I have no problem with DC's movies to this point, other than maybe Green Lantern. I think that and even that I thought was okay. I enjoyed it. It wasn't terrible, I didn't think. I mean, I know people hate it, but I didn't hate it. I think that, you know, stylistically it's probably not the choices I would have made, the ones that Zack Snyder made, but you know, it's Zack Snyder, so it's his call. And I, you know, I got enjoyment out of all of them. And I think that Aquaman was my favorite. He may have been my favorite from Justice League. So I'm really anticipating a good movie. It's going to be wall-to-wall action, it looks like. It's going to be tremendous special effects. Whereas Shazam, I think, is going to be, like you said, more Guardians of the Galaxy-ish in terms of comedy, maybe like a Thor Ragnarok kind of thing. I anticipate that both are going to be quite enjoyable.
There you have it.
Yeah. Thanks for the question, Lee. What do we got in the old Twitter? Do we have anything from Mark Johnson, by the way? Dave?
We do. If you're looking for through Twitter.
I'm looking through Twitter. I wanted to know if we have anything from Mark.
We do. So from friend of the podcast, Mark Johnson, taking a break from his law school, or excuse me, what's the exam that they have to take, the bar exam stuff. Should we all pitch in to buy pro refs new glasses?
No, they can buy their own damn glasses. They're stealing money from MLS.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, they're we are definitely not getting our money's worth so far. So, yeah. And as a matter of fact, maybe not even glasses. I don't want any problems with them fogging up. So if those guys could make sure that they've got contacts, if they need bifocal contacts, go ahead and do that, whatever it needs to be. But yeah, I'm in agreement. I don't want to pay for it.
Yeah.
We already are.
Yeah. We paid enough, really. Thanks, Mark. Ryan Smith, he has a question. He first wants to state that he's bought in with O'Connor. He's tactically sound, and the boys look better. That said, do you think the front office would sack him before season end in any win versus loss scenario? And if so, why?
Well, I suppose if they lost every single game, maybe. Since that's technically a scenario, but I don't think that'll happen. So I believe them when they say that they got the guy that they wanted. And I think that the results that he's gotten so far, especially when you consider the reffing that we talked about earlier, are promising. So I'm buying in also, Ryan. And I don't think that what we'll be saying goodbye to him, you know, by the end of the season.
I have been of the opinion twice now that I think Orlando City moved at the wrong time. I'm just not buying that things couldn't have gotten better when Christ got his starters back. And I definitely didn't buy into Adrian Heath getting sacked. One league loss after, a 6-game unbeaten streak, an 8-game unbeaten streak. It was something. I mean, the team was actually playing well. They were level, I think, on points for the last playoff spot, but they didn't own the tiebreaker. Christ had his team above the playoff line when he was fired. So I don't have any idea what this front office will do. If they don't make the playoffs, I don't feel good about James O'Connor staying, because they've said, we feel like this roster should make the playoffs. We just need the right coach to do it. This is the coach they picked. They've said he's their guy, the number one choice. So basically, I think he's got to make the playoffs to be safe.
And if
he doesn't make the playoffs, do I think they'll fire him? I think they shouldn't, but I don't know if they will. I think first of all, James O'Connor's first look at MLS, his first trip around the league. So I think he's got some learning to do. He's a young coach. He's a good coach. He's a young coach. He needs some time. He's already looks like he's got this team energized and playing better. He seems to be saying and doing the right things, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be safe. And I just don't have any faith in this front office. And quite honestly, if they do fire James O'Connor at the end of this season because he didn't make the playoffs, everyone's got to go above him. Everyone. I'm talking GM. I'm talking CEO. Because they went out and said, these are our guys. This is the guy, our number one choice, who's going to get us there. So if he doesn't get him there and he's deemed a failure, who really failed here? The guys that hired James O'Connor, right?
I would tend to agree with you on that, yeah.
So that's my take on it. I think that right now, the two guys who should really want James O'Connor to start winning games, and I know they do, but for different reason, are Alex Letao and Nikki Budalich. Those guys need James O'Connor to win as much as James O'Connor needs to win.
Well, and we all hope that that's indeed what is happening. Although, like you said, early results seem to be favorable, but especially coming in with this stretch of games that they're having to deal with. So if he can navigate that, you know, in not horrible fashion, then I think that bodes well.
We'll see what happens. I mean, you know, Jason Kreis had extenuating circumstances. They didn't save him. Will Silvio Petrescu decision making cost James O'Connor in the end because they missed the playoffs by a point? I don't know. It's hard to say. But I appreciate the question, Ryan, and we thank you for that. And please get your questions in every week. Hit us up on Twitter. We are at the Mainland, and you can use that hashtag AskTMLPC. The reason it's AskTMLPC is because AskTML was already taken. It was already a hashtag when I started this thing.
You know what? It actually rolls off the tongue better with the PC, to be honest.
Yeah. It was just going to be P, but it was TMLP didn't sound right. So the PC at the end sounded right. And then, you know, they signed PC. So now he thinks it's his podcast.
Well, then he's not putting the work in. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Or you can, of course, email us at themainland@gmail.com. I know I said a long time ago we're getting a new dedicated email address, but God knows when that's going to happen. I've inquired. I will make another inquiry and see if that's any closer. Sometimes things at our mothership move a little slowly, but that's okay. It's okay.
It's still coming.
Yeah.
Just, you know, it's not like you can't do anything else in the meantime.
That's right. We got our Gmail account. That's all that matters. Themainland@gmail.com. Just hit us up. Ask us anything. All right, Dave, before we get out of here, we've got a couple of games to talk about for next week. We've got Thursday night coming up, New York City FC at Orlando City Stadium to go for the sweep, and Orlando has not scored a goal in this series this year. Will Patrick Vieira's moving on to Nice have anything to do with this? What do you see happening? What's your key matchups? What's your prediction?
Oh, yeah. All right. So key matchup, once again, the guy that you got to watch out for, David Villa on that squad. And can we keep them out of the back of the net? So a lot of it's so much depends on who James O'Connor plays. But I think we'll still see O'Neill. I anticipate we'll still see Schuler. The question is whether we'll have Joe back in goal again, or if Earl Edwards Jr. will have gotten better. These are questions that we're all asking. So my matchup is David Villa against the defense, and how much they can limit him. As far as my score prediction, I'm going to be on a positive note and say a 1-1 draw.
Oh, man. I'll have to change my final score prediction because you took mine yet again. I'm just going to start going first from now on.
Okay, well, before you do, though, I do want to give it up to you because you did predict the Philadelphia score line of 2-1 loss. So you finally got one right.
No, I didn't.
No?
It was 1-0.
Oh, was it 1-0? Oh, that's right.
I believe that I picked 1-0 for the Columbus game.
You did pick 1-0 for the Columbus game.
So I just had I got one right. I just got the wrong date.
Oh, yeah. Okay. See, I tried.
Yeah. Well, okay. Here's my key matchup, because Orlando City has not scored against this team this year. I have got to say that the key matchup for me is busting past Alexander Ring. That guy has been tremendous against us. He mm-hmm. has been fantastic. He's shielded their back line, so the back line hasn't had that much to do. But it's certainly the Orlando City attacking midfield against Alex Ring. That's where I see this matchup pivoting. I think that's going to be the key. And Orlando City, it's important to score the first goal, but they can't score the first goal if they don't score a goal. And they haven't been able to do that against the Pigeons this year. I will say that the final score then will be 2-2. I have to say 2-2. because you took 1-1. Okay. You took 1-1, and you took it from me, and I'm never forgiving you.
So here's your opportunity for to forgive me is you get to go first on the next one.
All right. So, you know, the schedule makers love Orlando City, and they're sending Orlando back to L.A. for the second time this year. The Lions have never won in the state of California, Dave, as you know. 0-1 against the Galaxy, 0-1 against LAFC, and 0-2 out there against San Jose. So no wins in California. Key matchups and predictions. I will go ahead and go first. You must control the Zlatan. You have to control the Zlatan. That has to happen.
So you're daring to control Zlatan?
Yes, you have to dare to Zlatan, Orlando City. You must. You have to mess with the Zlatan. it's imperative that you mess with the Zlatan. Because he will just absolutely destroy you. He will score goals that make Will Trapps look like a weak bouncer that went off three guys. He will just absolutely destroy this back line and this defensive midfield if they give him space. So they cannot give him space. That is the key matchup, Orlando City's defense against the Zlatan. My prediction is a 2-1 LA win.
Okay. So now I know how you feel. You stole everything that I was going to say.
Good. See how you like it.
That's right. So now I have to make something up. That's not what you said, even though I completely agree with you. So I'm going to say that the key matchup is going to be how good Orlando City can continue to counterattack. I anticipate that LA is going to score a goal and that Zlatan is going to score a goal, at least one. So if they can feed off of what they did in the Columbus game early, where they were getting, you know, good counterattacks and scoring goals that way, then that will help. However, I'm going to have to agree with you on your prediction of a 2-1 loss.
Yeah, and I want to congratulate in advance David Villa and Zlatan for their MLS Goal of the Week candidates.
Right. You heard it here first.
Preemptively, congratulations. Not feeling it that game. I mean, just I don't know what it is about California, but it's not been good for Orlando. Even the trips to San Jose haven't been good for Orlando. So.
Here's one good thing. Typically, when they go out west, they go out a little bit early, right?
Yeah, well, here's what's going to happen. They're going to probably leave Friday, or I would say they'll probably leave Friday. They'll play Thursday night, and then they'll leave Friday. And they'll be out there on short rest after a long cross-country trip. And that's never a good recipe.
I didn't say that that was good. I'm simply saying that they, unlike a normal week, they can't go out there on Thursday, when they've historically done that and it's gone bad. So maybe it's better. I'm looking for something, anything.
Well, you keep grasping at straws, Dan. We'll be back to talk about it all next week. We'll break down Orlando City against New York City FC and against the LA Galaxy against Andy. The schedule should ease up a bit after that for the remainder of the season after Orlando's good and far out of the playoffs. They made sure of that already. And, even if they started to play good, give them a penalty. But that's just the way it goes. This is the cursed team. It picked up the idol that the Brady Bunch left in Hawaii, and it's been worn around the neck of Kingston or something. I don't know. I'm trying to find out where this bad juju is coming from. Anyway, we'll talk about those games. We'll talk a little bit about the Tournament of Nations. Maybe we'll have some news on the trade front, the transfer front. Who knows? I couldn't tell you, but I can tell you this. We'll be back to talk about it next week. So why don't we wrap up episode number 135 of the Mainland Podcast? Sorry we didn't have a guest this week. Guys, this is the first time in the calendar year, and we had to record a little early this week. So that left us a little bit less time to, dig one up. And again, I ran outside. I yelled Silvio Petrescu's name several times.
We tried.
Nobody answered. There was no response. His people didn't get back to my people and didn't make any effort. He couldn't be bothered. But,
feel free to let him know about it on Twitter.
God, I can't even imagine that he's got a Twitter. I can't even imagine he's got a Twitter account. But it's probably a funny name. If he does, it's probably like, Ref Boss Ref or something like that,
Boss Ref, yeah. Ref X, because he's cool.
It's probably ridiculous. Anyway, so on behalf of David Rowe, I will sign off of episode number 135 of the Mainland Podcast by saying, as I always do, by the way, Michael Citro, the managing editor of themainland.com, signing off saying, go City and go U.S. Women's National Team.